even just a paragraph or two. It's possible, but it would take a lifetime to go through them all. I can't even read many of them. Ask the professor to translate. He told me he doesn't know any silver magicians. But that wasn't quite what he'd said. He claimed silver magic had died out. It wasn't the same thing as never having known a silver magician. Daisy grasped my hand and dragged me away from the nook. Come on, let's confront him. It's my second day, I whined. I don't want to be difficult. You're not being difficult. We'll call it research. Librarians love research. We found Professor Nash at the front desk with a cup of tea in one hand and a book in the other. He put down the tea upon seeing us, but not the book.
Are you leaving, Miss Carmichael?
Daisy rounded the desk and perched on the edge near him, forcing the professor to scoot his chair back to avoid being bumped by her knees.
Not yet. Sylvia has a question for you.
She nodded at me to continue. I don't want to bother you if you're busy, I said. The professor gave me an encouraging smile.
You're no bother. How can I help?
It's a research question about magic. He put down the book and gave me his full attention. Daisy gave me a smug look.
Do any of your books mention silversmith magicians?
Several mention silver magic. Do you want a general primer or something more in depth?
I'm specifically after the names of silver magician families. He frowned in thought.
None mention names that I can immediately recall, although there are some texts written in medieval times that I haven't looked through in a while. They might reference specific magicians.
Nothing recent?
No.
His frown deepened.
Miss Ash, this is the second time you've asked me about silver magic. I'm thrilled you have an interest in magic, but why that discipline in particular?
My brother, thought he, we are descended from silver magicians. I didn't have the opportunity to discuss it with him before he died, but now I'm curious to know more too. Not that I agree with him. I have no affinity for silver objects. Daisy and I asked at the Silversmith's Guild, and Ash is not a name that appears in their archives.
And your mother's maiden name? Grandmother's maiden names?
I lifted a shoulder. I'm afraid I don't know them. His lips formed a tight O. Clearly he thought it curious that my mother had never told me her own maiden name. I suspected he wanted to ask why, but was too polite to ask. I wished I'd never brought it up. I'm sure James was mistaken. His notes were probably just the ramblings of an exhausted soldier. Let's forget I mentioned it.
Everyone has a right to know where they came from, Sylvia,
Daisy said gently. My mother thought differently. She hadn't told us her maiden name, never mentioned my father or grandparents, and wouldn't even tell us where she was originally from or where my brother and I had been born. It had crossed my mind more than once that we were adopted, but James looked too much like her not to be her natural child. While I was a little like her with my small stature and grey eyes, those traits were common enough that I didn't feel absolutely certain she was my mother. I didn't have her colouring for one thing. My hair was lighter, almost blonde in bright light, and freckles dusted my nose and cheeks in the summertime. My mother's hair was brown before it went grey, and freckles wouldn't dare appear on her skin, or she'd have tried to lighten them with lemon juice, as she'd once tried with mine. Professor Nash pushed his glasses up his nose.
Miss Carmichael is right. Besides, I'm intrigued now, so you must pursue it, Miss Ash.
I sighed. I suppose it can't hurt to see how far we get with our research.
Excellent. However, books may not be of assistance in this case. The last time you asked me about silver magic, I told you there are no living silver magicians. As far as I am aware, that's true.
He poked the air with his finger to punctuate his next point.
However, I do recall India telling me about a silver magician she'd met. It was around the time of the riots in the spring of 91.
At least I knew Gabe wasn't lying to me about not knowing a silver magician. I didn't know his precise age, but if he was born before 1891, he would have been very young.
Her name was Mary something, the professor went on. No, that's not quite right. Mary. Marion. Marianne.
He thumped the desk with his fist in triumph.
That's it, Marianne. I can't recall her surname, though. I am sorry.
Ring any bells?
Daisy asked me. I shook my head.
She may have been a relative, an aunt or cousin, something like that.
Daisy sounded as enthusiastic as Professor Nash.
What else can you tell us about her, Prof?
Nothing. I never met her. India did. India and Matt. Pity you can't ask them. Try Cyclops or Willy. They were all joined at the hip back then. If India and Matt met her, it's likely their friends did too.
The idea of speaking to either Cyclops or Willy again didn't appeal to me at all. Willy clearly didn't like me, and Cyclops had given me a somewhat threatening look when I'd brought up Gabe's incredible wartime feat. He seemed to place me in the same category as the journalist who was pestering Gabe.
You should call on one of them this evening, Professor Nash said. I'm sure they'd both be happy to answer your questions. Willy, in particular, likes to tell stories of their adventures.
I smiled and nodded, and let him think I would do just that. Daisy gave me a skeptical look, however. She knew me well, despite our relatively short acquaintance. Fortunately, she had errands to run before the end of the day and had to leave. Nor was she waiting for me when I arrived back at the lodging house. Someone else was, however. When I opened the door to my room, my heart leapt into my throat and pounded out an erratic rhythm. I should have taken that as a warning, but I did not. I closed the door behind me and stumbled innocently into the wasp's nest. Chapter 10. Lady Stanhope stood in the middle of my room, a look of disgust on her face. I wasn't sure if it was directed at me or her surroundings. My room may have been small, the furnishings simple, but it was clean and tidy. I could only guess that she was disgusted with me. She would have been an attractive woman if she smiled more. It would seem she only reserved her smiles for young artists. I wished Horatio were here to diffuse the tension. He might not be here, but I could use his name.
Did Horatio tell you where to find me? We're good friends, you see, and
I don't care who your friends are. So much for that idea. She didn't even flicker an eyelash. I expect nothing about this woman moved involuntarily, not even a flap of her skirts in the breeze. The stiff fabric would see to that. Her movements were controlled, contained, and designed to convey superiority and authority. On anyone else, they would feel practiced, but I suspected they were innate to her now. Perhaps she'd rehearsed them in front of a mirror many years ago until they became second nature. The only time I'd seen that visage slip was when Ludlow had spoken angrily to her. She'd probably been in shock. It wouldn't be often that a servant raised his voice to her. Lady Stanhope stepped toward me, her chin lifted at an arrogant angle. She eyed me coolly.
Who are you?
I'm Sylvia Ash.
I mean, who are you? Who do you work for?
I leveled my gaze with hers, determined not to show how anxious this meeting made me.
I'm just an assistant librarian. I was briefly employed as a temporary assistant to the exhibition manager at the Royal Academy.
Do you work for the police?
No. They spoke to me about a situation that you witnessed at the gallery. You were the only witness, Miss Ash. Tell me how the police knew about it if you didn't inform them.
I don't work for the police, I said again. She walked slowly around the room, picking up things and studying them before putting them down. Again, I was reminded of someone who was aware of every move she made and chose them for maximum impact. Every slide of her finger across a book cover was done on purpose, every pinch of her lips and every glance. She picked up a framed photograph of my mother, James, and me, taken when we were small.
No, Father. What do you want,
Lady Stanhope?
I want you to know that you can no longer work for the Academy. You've been blacklisted across all departments. You can't even be employed to take out the rubbish.
That doesn't affect me. I found other employment.
Ah, yes, the Glass Library.
How do you know where I work?
I asked.
She glanced at the door as she said it. Some of the other lodgers knew where I worked now. It was not a secret, and they had no reason not to tell her.
Don't cross my path again, Miss Ashe.
Am I clear?
Abundantly.
She studied the photograph again.
They're dead now, aren't they? You're alone in the world.
She must have learned that from the loose-lipped lodgers, too.
What a sad thing it is for a young woman to be alone in London.
I have friends. She smiled, her lips stretching into a thin gash amid her pale face.
We both know it's not the same. Friends won't miss you like family would if something terrible were to happen to you.
I swallowed heavily. She strode past me and left. I rushed to close the door and locked it. I leaned back against it and released a pent-up breath. That woman had no power over me. She couldn't affect me. I no longer worked for the Royal Academy and was gainfully employed out of her sphere of influence. So why did I feel the prickle of unease creeping across my skin? I was being followed. The sensation wasn't new to me. I'd been aware of someone watching me on the night I left Burlington House for the final time. But I was quite sure that person hadn't followed me across the courtyard, mostly because there was nowhere to hide in the courtyard. I would have noticed them in the vast open space. This time, there were many places for someone to hide every time I turned around in an attempt to catch them. Recessed doorways, parked vehicles, and mailboxes all provided excellent coverage. But it would be just as easy to blend into the crowd of pedestrians also making their way to work. Men's clothing didn't differentiate much. I quickly ruled out Lady Stanhope. There weren't many ladies about. Mr. Ludlow, however, was a likely suspect. He might have the same idea as his co-conspirator and want to threaten me too. When I reached the entrance to Crooked Lane, I decided to confront him. I waited, but couldn't see him, however. I couldn't see anyone suspicious. Pedestrians continued past me, their faces unfamiliar. I entered the lane and hurried to the library. I was about to open the door when a hand clamped over my mouth and my arms were pinned to my sides. I was pulled back against a muscular body.
What did I ever do to you?
The snarling voice belonged to Tommy Allen, the packer with the scar. I tried to wriggle out of his grip, but it was too firm. He was much stronger than me. Panic fluttered in my chest. I cried out, but my voice was muffled by his hand. Professor Nash wouldn't hear me.
Girls like you make me sick. You're all the same. You judge me without knowing a thing about me.
He spat the words, spraying spittle on my neck.
Was I the first person you thought of when the pigs question you, huh? They want to find a thief, and the first person you thought of was the ugly man with the scar. Does my face frighten you? Do I scare you?
I managed to utter a muffled, yes. It was true. He did scare me. But the more he spoke, the more my mind cleared. My fear was still raw and ice cold, but it was no longer overwhelming. With the clarity of mind came the memory of combat lessons taught by my mother. She'd also been afraid, but of what? I still didn't know. What I did know was that to extricate myself from Tommy's grip, I had to stomp on his toes, elbow him in the gut, turn and kick him in his masculine parts. Once I recalled my training, the four moves came back to me effortlessly. When he was bending over, clutching his nether region and expelling a hiss like a leaking gas pipe through clenched teeth, I opened the library door.
Professor Nash, telephone the police, please.
Miss Ashe?
Came his voice from deep inside.
What's the matter?
Tommy grunted in frustration and perhaps pain too, and limped away.
It's your character I find ugly, Mr. Allen.
I called after him.
Not your face.
Professor Nash appeared at the library door.
Miss Ash, who is that fellow?
A suspect in Gabe's case. He gasped.
I'll telephone him immediately.
No. I followed him inside and closed the door. It's not necessary. Mr. Allen made his point and I made mine. The professor bade me sit on the chair at the front desk.
You look a little shaken. I'll make you a cup of tea.
It was true. I couldn't stop shaking. Now that the initial rush of energy had dissipated, my confidence had faded with it. I couldn't believe I'd fought off Tommy Allen and managed to toss a quip out too. Thank you, Mother, I muttered once the professor was out of earshot. Her many lessons in self-defense had finally been useful. To be quite honest, I hadn't known I had it in me. I'd never had cause to put her training into practice and never thought myself capable, particularly against a man. It felt extremely satisfying, to say the least. But that didn't stop me shaking. I was still shaking when Professor Nash returned with a cup of tea. He hovered nearby while I sipped, perhaps concerned I'd be suddenly overcome with an attack of the vapors. By the time I finished the tea, I was feeling calmer. Or so I thought. When the door suddenly opened, I jumped, knocking the empty teacup onto the floor.
Miss Ash.
Gabe rushed in and clasped me by the shoulders. His concerned gaze swept over my face.
Are you all right?
I nodded, despite my nerves twitching all over again. This time, it was from my reaction to his touch and the way he studied me intently, looking for signs that I was about to crumple into a tearful heap. I didn't want to like that troubled look in his green eyes, or the way his strong hands felt as he rubbed my shoulders, but I did. I liked it very much.
I'm sorry, Miss Ash, Professor Nash said. I know you didn't want me to, but I telephoned him when I made the tea. I thought it for the best.
Gabe released me and straightened.
You didn't want him to call me? Why?
I sighed. Professor Nash was right. Gabe needed to know. Tommy Allen was a suspect, and the confrontation could be a sign of his guilt. Gabe tilted his head to the side and crossed his arms.
Are you still upset about me paying your wages?
I looked away before his deep-sea gaze saw more than I intended it to. I didn't want to be a bother. He dropped to his haunches in front of me.
If I've given you the impression that you're a bother, I'm sorry.
It wasn't fair to let him think that when he'd admitted he'd felt guilt, not pity. That came out wrong. What I meant to say was, I handled the situation. I doubt Tommy Allen will confront me again, but you should have been informed. He claimed you questioned him.
I did, yesterday. I didn't mention your name, but he must have realized the intelligence came from you.
He stood and sat on the edge of the desk, arms once again crossed over his chest.
How did he find out where you worked?
He followed me from home. He probably got the address from my employee file at the academy.
It was fortunate he waited until you reached the library to attack, so Nash could help.
Oh, I had nothing to do with it.
The professor had stepped away to give us some privacy, but not far enough if he still overheard.
He was gone by the time I realized something was amiss.
They both looked at me, expectant. The door opened, saving me from responding. Alex strode in and took in the situation.
Are you unarmed, Miss Ash?
At my nod, he added,
I was there when Gabe received your telephone call. I drove him here and have been parking the motor.
I'm fine, thank you. I was just about to tell Gabe that Tommy Allen hasn't been the only thorn in my side. I had a visit from Lady Stanhope last night. Gabe swore under his breath.
Who is Lady Stanhope?
The professor asked.
Another suspect, Gabe said. I spoke to her yesterday too. Did she threaten you, Sylvia?
I nodded. Her threat wasn't accompanied by violence, but it felt more sinister, if that makes sense.
Sinister? I didn't get that impression from her. She was very helpful and answered all my questions.
Alex grunted.
Of course she's helpful to you. What does that mean? It means she'll be polite to you because you're the Rycroft heir. She sees you as her equal. She wouldn't be as helpful if I were asking the questions.
Gabe looked offended by the suggestion. If he knew my thoughts, he'd be even more offended, so I kept them to myself. I suspected Lady Stanhope was polite to him for reasons other than his class. He was young and handsome, her favourite type of man. I, on the other hand, was someone she thought she could easily intimidate and manipulate. While I liked to think neither was true, I was still rattled by her visit. Gabe scrubbed a hand over his jaw.
Her visit is telling. Clearly she didn't like you informing me of her altercation with Ludlow. Because she's guilty of the theft? Embarrassed I know how a servant treated her? Or something else?
I reckon she's embarrassed,
Alex said.
People like her unleash their claws when they feel humiliated.
Have you considered that Tommy Allen might be working for Lady Stanhope and Ludlow? I asked. He can move around Burlington House easier than her. Packers are coming and going all the time during setup. No one would notice if he went into the storeroom where the Delaroche painting was kept, but Lady Stanhope and Mr. Ludlow would be more recognizable.
I think you're right, Alex said. Gabe?
Gabe pushed off from the desk.
We'll call on Burlington House to find out where Tommy Allen lives, and we'll pay him a visit. If he's merely the muscle rather than the brains, he might point the finger at whoever hired him when we tell him how much trouble he's in. He also needs to know that if anything happens to Sylvia, he'll be held to account. Come on.
I half rose from the chair, only to sit back down again when I realized he was speaking to Alex, not me. I would dearly like to face the man who'd attacked me and let him see I wasn't afraid of him. But I didn't dare do it alone.
Perhaps you'd like to go too, Miss Ash,
Professor Nash said loudly so that Gabe could hear.
It may be a healing experience for you to confront that fellow.
I wasn't sure how he realized it was what I needed, but I was grateful to him.
Only if you can release her for a few hours,
Gabe said.
And if Sylvia wants to come too, of course. I wouldn't want to be seen to use my position.
Alex smacked his fist into Gabe's shoulder.
Shut up. You can see she wants to join us.
I mouthed a thank you to Professor Nash and slipped out of the library ahead of them. Gabe and Alex fell into step on either side of me in the lane.
Maybe Tommy Allen is the one watching you, Gabe,
Alex said. You're being watched? I asked. Gabe gave his friend a glare over the top of my head.
It's probably just that journalist. Or it could be the kidnapper,
Alex said.
And the kidnapper could be the thief.
Gabe released a measured breath.
Don't, Alex.
I got the feeling they were exchanging glances over my head again, but I was too busy looking for the person or persons following Gabe to notice. I couldn't see anyone watching us as we climbed into the Vauxhall, nor following us in their own vehicle. We drove too fast for a horse-drawn carriage to keep up. Even a motor car would have struggled. Gabe wove in and out of the traffic with abandon. With one hand keeping my hat in place and another clutching my bag, I slid from one side of the back seat to the other like a tennis ball. I was grateful when we pulled to the curb outside Burlington House, at which point Alex declared we hadn't been followed. He'd been checking over his shoulder the entire journey. We found Mr. Bolton in his office, but he was on the telephone. The assistant, Mr. Driscoll, invited us to sit and wait in the outer office, but his friendly smile slipped when I introduced myself. He returned to his task of stuffing flyers into envelopes. I hope you're feeling better, I said. He looked quite well to me. He was mid-twenties, handsome, with a hairstyle that defied gravity at the front. It was only when he bent his head forward that I realized the upswept fringe was meant to detract from the balding patch near the back.
I am, thank you.
His tone was clipped, not inviting more conversation. I sat on one of the wooden chairs, my bag on my lap, and waited. Gabe, however, had taken Mr. Driscoll's stiff response like a bull to a red rag. He charged right in.
You were sick. I hope it wasn't the flu.
It wasn't.
What ailed you?
A cough.
You stayed away from work because of a cough?
One can never be too careful these days.
Mr. Driscoll cleared his throat
and made a show of stretching his neck out of his collar.
Do you have access to the employee files? Gabe went on.
Mr. Driscoll finally met his gaze, his eyes wide.
No!
One side of Alex's mouth twitched with his smirk. Gabe reached across the desk and picked up a file.
Isn't this one?
He read the front.
Archibald Makepeace.
Mr. Driscoll snatched the file back.
Please sit down. Mr. Bolton will be with you in a moment.
You're lying.
No!
It came out as a high-pitched squeak. Mr. Driscoll cleared his throat again.
I assure you, I haven't lied.
Gabe's jaw suddenly firmed and his demeanor changed.
Someone gave out the home address of Miss Ash.
He kept his voice low, menacing. A far cry from the friendly one I was used to.
Was it you?
Mr. Driscoll closed his eyes and blew out a measured breath.
Yes. Yes, it was me. I gave Lady Stanhope her address.
Gabe pressed both hands on the desk and leaned in.
You should be fired for that.
Mr. Driscoll nodded quickly.
Yes, sir, you're right. I apologize. It was very unprofessional of me.
Don't apologize to me.
Mr. Driscoll's rapid nods continued as his gaze shifted to me.
I am very sorry, Miss Ash, but Lady Stanhope was most insistent and I felt as though I couldn't say no.
Gabe glanced over his shoulder at me, his brows raised, asking if I was satisfied with the apology.
Apology accepted, I said. At least now we knew where the leak had occurred.
But I wasn't entirely sure Lady Stanhope had passed on my address to Tommy Allen. It wasn't necessary for them both to warn me off, unless they didn't know about the other's visit. If they were working together, and if Lady Stanhope had given him my address, shouldn't they have known? Mr. Bolton marched out of his office and regarded the three of us in turn, offering a nod to the men and a
good morning, Miss Ash,
to me.
Come into my office.
He spun on his heel and marched back inside. I half expected Mr. Driscoll to beg us not to inform his employer of his indiscretion, but he merely watched us go with a sigh of relief. Mr. Bolton regarded us from the other side of his desk.
I didn't know you two knew each other. Now, tell me what I can do for you.
He barked it out like an order.
I was accosted by Mr. Allen, the packer, I said. It happened outside my new place of work, but he followed me from home. Do you know how he got my address?
Mr. Bolton's no-nonsense demeanor slipped a little more with every passing moment.
My dear Miss Ash, that's dreadful, dreadful indeed. I assure you, neither I nor Driscoll have given out your address.
You can't account for your assistant's actions,
Gabe said.
I suppose not, but I still can't imagine he would do such a thing. Man's as straight as an arrow.
Mr. Bolton glanced at the closed door, then his gaze slowly shifted back to Gabe.
Do you think this is related to your investigation into the theft glass? Is that why you've accompanied Miss Ash?
It's a possibility.
Mr. Bolton huffed and huffed again, shaking his head.
It pains me to think of Tommy Allen being caught up in this mess, but I suppose I can't defend him merely because I feel sorry for him.
He indicated the side of his face.
It must be difficult for him, what with the scar. Miss Ash, I feel somewhat responsible and must apologize. Tommy met you here, and if I'd known what would happen, I would never have put you in harm's way by employing you.
It took all my self-control not to retort that Tommy was the one he should regret employing.
Is Mr. Allen in today?
Gabe asked.
We need to re-question him.
I'm afraid he left our employ. As with several on the packing team, he was hired on a temporary basis only.
Do you have an address for him?
Driscoll!
Mr. Driscoll opened the door and peered through the gap, like a rabbit sniffing for predators before emerging from its burrow.
Sir? Give them the address of Tommy Allen.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bolton dismissed us with a curt nod, and we followed Mr. Driscoll back to his desk. He looked through his files, then wrote an address on a piece of paper,
He handed it to Alex, all the while avoiding our gazes. We didn't head outside straight away, but went to check on the seascape on display in the main gallery. It was still there, attracting the most attention. A policeman stood beside it, gazing idly back at the art lovers as if he were a piece in the exhibition. He exchanged some words with Alex before Alex rejoined us.
All's well,
he reported. Outside Burlington House, Gabe and Alex discussed the likelihood Mr. Driscoll had told Tommy Allen where I lived, and if he did, why he hadn't admitted it when he admitted passing on my details to Lady Stanhope. I wasn't listening very closely, however. The last time I crossed the Burlington House courtyard, I'd felt as though I was being watched. There were several people about now, and it was broad daylight, but I didn't experience that feeling this time. We drove to Lambeth, on the other side of the river, an area of London I'd not yet visited since arriving in the city. With good reason. I'd seen worse slums. Indeed, I'd lived in worse, when my mother's meagre wage was our family's sole income. Once James started to earn a living, our situation improved, and each subsequent move resulted in slightly better accommodation than the last. The street on which Tommy Allen lived was crammed with terraced houses squeezed together to fit in the maximum number. The only remarkable thing about them was their uniformity. Three levels high, two windows wide, brown brick and black doors with the paint peeling off. London's air was never very clean, but in Lambeth, the smoke stung the eyes and clogged the throat the moment we stepped out of the motor. The nearby industry was the lifeblood of most residents, providing employment, but the thick air couldn't be good for the health of those who spent all day, every day breathing it in. Alex wanted to wait by the motor to protect it from the dirty fingers of children. He stood sentinel, arms crossed over his massive chest, doing his best impression of a villainous henchman. Gabe had made a half-hearted suggestion that I remain in the motor, but I was still determined to confront Tommy Allen. I doubted he would be home, however. It was the middle of the day. He'd probably found new work by now. I was right. He wasn't there, according to the woman who answered Gabe's knock. Indeed, he no longer lived there. He'd moved out. The woman was his former fiancée, and she was relieved to see the back of him.
I made him pack his bags and sent him on his way. I put up with him long enough on account of him coming home from the war all broken and scarred, but they sent him back with a few cards missing from the deck.
She tapped her temple.
His drinking got worse, and when he was drunk, he got angry. He took that anger out on me and my sister.
She jerked her thumb over her shoulder, which I took to mean her sister was inside.
A bit of shouting don't bother us, but when he hit her, well, that was it. She's my only family, and I got to protect her. I told Tommy to leave, threw his things outside right where you're standing. Best thing I ever did.
Where can we find him now? Gabe asked.
She settled a hand on her outthrust hip.
He fell in with a bad lot after I kicked him out, but I don't reckon he moved in with any of them. They ain't got no room, and they ain't the sort to help out their fellow man in his hour of need.
She heaved broad shoulders in a shrug.
I reckon he's just living by his wits.
She chuckled, revealing a missing tooth on the bottom row.
That's a joke, 'cause he ain't got none.
Are you telling us he's homeless now? Gabe asked.
That'd be my guess. Try the poorhouses for returned soldiers.
Gabe thanked her, and she disappeared inside. We returned to the motor where Alex was in conversation with a group of local men, all smoking. Gabe sighed.
We could do as she says and try the poorhouses, but he could very well be on the streets. Finding him will be impossible.
One of the men dropped his cigarette butt on the ground and smothered it with the heel of his boot. There were dozens of cigarette butts littering the pavement, many of them blown by the wind against the brick walls where they formed small piles.
I'd seen a pile of cigarette butts recently, but they'd not been blown around by the wind. If I was right, they'd all been discarded by one man.
I think I know where Tommy has been living, I said, unable to keep the triumph out of my voice. Get in, I'll show you.
Chapter 11.
It hadn't occurred to me at the time that the bundle of dust sheets on the storeroom floor at Burlington House was the bedding of someone living there. But now that I knew Tommy Allen was homeless, it made sense. The cigarette butts had been the clue. The pile beside the bedding had to have been made by a heavy smoker who spent a great deal of time there. Every night, Tommy pretended to go home after his shift finished, but doubled back before the doors were locked and snuck into the basement storeroom. He'd probably been sneaking back in when I'd left on my last night. He'd slipped into the shadows and watched me until I was off the premises altogether. I folded my arms to suppress my shiver.
"You're cold,"
Gabe said as we descended the stairs behind Mr. Bolton.
"I'm fine."
Mr. Bolton pushed open the door and I showed them where I'd seen the bedding and cigarette butts, but the dust covers had been placed over artwork and the pile of cigarette butts had been disturbed. Going by the rat droppings, it was obvious what had disturbed them.
"He hasn't been here for a few days at least," Gabe said. "He must have found other accommodation."
I shivered again. The chill settled into my bones and remained there. With a reassuring hand on my lower back, Gabe steered me out of the storeroom and up the stairs. Neither of us spoke until we were out of Mr. Bolton's hearing, but Gabe's pace slowed as we crossed the courtyard. He glanced through the gate to Piccadilly, where Alex was waiting with the motor. Then he stopped altogether.
"I don't mean to frighten you, Sylvia, but you could be in danger."
The thought had already occurred to me. Indeed, it was all I could think about. While I told him earlier at the library that Tommy wouldn't dare attack me again, my bravado had since vanished, replaced by a strong dose of reality. It was unlikely Tommy had been frightened off altogether. All I'd really achieved was to anger him further and alert him that I was capable of some self-defense moves. He wouldn't be caught by surprise next time.
"He knows where you live and work," Gabe went on. "So I think you should move into my house."
I stared at him. Then I started laughing. He did not join in. He simply looked back at me, his face grave. I sobered. "You weren't joking."
"I think it's the best solution, at least until he's caught. You're too exposed at the lodging house."
"I could stay with Daisy or Horatio."
"And place them in danger too?"
He had a point. "But I hardly know you."
"Very well, let's see. I'm 29 years old, an only child, and was brought up on the family estate in Dorset. My favourite food is anything that doesn't come out of a tin can, and my favourite season is spring. I like animals, and used to be scared of the dark until I was 8.
"What happened at 8 to make you no longer scared?"
"Willie gave me a puppy. It slept on my bed with me."
Despite my anxiety, I couldn't help smiling. "You make her sound quite sweet."
"There are many words to describe Willie, but sweet isn't one of them."
"What will she think of me moving in?" His smile widened.
"That sounded like a yes to me."
"And Willie?" I prompted.
"Don't worry, I know how to handle her."
He might, but I didn't. I wasn't sure being under the same roof as someone who disliked me was better than living in the lodging house, despite the extra comforts a large Mayfair residence provided. We set off again across the courtyard toward Piccadilly.
"Alex also lives with us," he said.
"He doesn't live with his parents?"
"He did until my parents left for America. The arrangement suited us both. He wanted to get out of a crowded house. He has 3 sisters, and I wanted the company."
"Weren't Willie and the servants enough company for you?"
"Bristow and Mrs. Bristow are elderly, and the other servants don't live in. And you've met Willie. Do I need to say more?"
I laughed. "Very well. I'll move in, but only on a temporary basis."
"Good. I'll return you to the library, then go home and have the housekeeper make up a room for you."
"You should also warn Willie. I don't want to turn up on the doorstep unannounced." Unfortunately, Willie wasn't at home, so Gabe informed me when he collected me from the lodging house at dusk. I'd returned there after work to pack and waited for him in the sitting room with my 2 suitcases and a hat box, the sum of all my belongings. Mrs. Whitten had lectured me about ruining myself, and then informed me I could never return there for fear of infecting the other girls with my immorality. I didn't bother trying to tell her the arrangement wasn't what she imagined. She wouldn't believe me. Nor did I inform Gabe that I was barred from returning. It changed nothing. Willie still wasn't back when we arrived at number 16 Park Street. The housekeeper, Mrs. Bristow, the ancient wife of the ancient butler, showed me to the guest bedroom. The window was open to let in fresh air, but the room still smelled a little stale. It was quite a feminine room, with floral wallpaper on the wall behind the bed and a blue and white vase filled with pink roses on the dressing table. I supposed it was decorated in Lady Rycroft's style, not her son's, just like the rest of the house. From what I'd seen of it so far, it was tastefully done with comfort in mind rather than fashion. Daisy would probably find it out of date, but I found it warm. Mrs. Bristow proceeded to tell me about the rest of the occupants and servants while I unpacked. The Bristows were the only live-in servants nowadays. Mrs. Ling, the cook, Sally, the maid, and Dodson, the chauffeur, all lived in their own homes with their families. There was no footman, something which seemed to trouble the matter-of-fact housekeeper, probably because it meant her aging husband had no help. Nor was there a lady's maid, as Willie had no need of one, and Gabe didn't want a valet.
"You look capable of doing your own hair and mending," Mrs. Bristow said, giving me a thorough inspection.
"My mother was a seamstress."
"Is that so?"
She gave me another going over, this time squinting through her spectacles to get a better look. She gave a nod of approval. Indeed, I'd go so far as to say she seemed pleased. I tucked the small suitcase containing my brother's and mother's things under the bed.
"Tell me about Willie. Has she always lived here?"
"Off and on. She moved out each time she married and moved back in when the husband died. A word of warning, Miss Ash. Don't joke about her murdering them. She doesn't like it." I gawped at her.
"Did she kill them?"
Mrs. Bristow tapped the side of her nose and winked. I watched her waddle out of the bedroom with a sense of doom. What had I got myself into?
"Dinner is at 8, she said. "Do they dress for dinner?"
I looked down at my outfit and sighed. I couldn't do much better.
"Never mind."
I changed my blouse and redid my hair, then headed downstairs in search of Gabe, intending to be as amiable a house guest as possible. I stopped on the second floor landing at the sound of Willie's angry voice.
"How's it gonna look, Gabe?"
"Sylvia's safety is more important than what people think," he said.
I was surprised to hear that a woman who wore men's clothing was worried about convention and what people thought. She must care about him a great deal to worry about his reputation.
"This ain't about what people think, Gabe, and you know it,"
she went on.
"How are you going to explain it?"
"I'll be honest."
"That's the dumbest idea you've had, except in the one where you invited her to move in. Say she's a cousin."
"I'm not going to lie, Willie."
"Then you're gonna have to suffer the consequences, and there will be consequences."
"Willie," Gabe chided, "stop worrying. It's not like you."
She muttered something inaudible, then added,
"Alex, why didn't you stop this?"
Someone sighed heavily, probably Alex, at being dragged into the argument.
"It's Gabe's fault that it's not safe for Sylvia in the lodging house, so you have to understand he feels responsible. But I agree with you. She could have been put up elsewhere."
"I disagree,"
Gabe said at the same time Willie said,
"See?
Do you both think so little of me?"
Gabe went on, exasperated.
"There's nothing to worry about because I don't think of Sylvia that way."
"It ain't about what you think, Gabe. It's about how it looks. You invited a pretty woman to move in. That looks like you've got feelings for her."
"The only feeling I have for her is guilt."
It was fortunate I hadn't got my hopes up or they'd be bursting like balloons now. Even so, my ego was somewhat deflated. Willie growled in frustration.
"If I'm being the sensible one in this conversation, you know trouble's brewing."
The floorboards creaked, and I ducked behind a large potted palm. Thankfully, Willie stormed off down the stairs without looking in my direction. I waited for the front door to slam before I emerged from my hiding place. But I did not enter the room. I didn't want to face Gabe. My presence was clearly a problem. Willie was right. My living here compromised Gabe. The 29-year-old son of a wealthy baron had excellent marriage prospects. But not if everyone thought he kept a mistress. I turned to go.
I have a telephone call to make,
I heard Gabe say. I picked up my skirts and raced up the stairs, but I wasn't fast enough.
Sylvia, wait.
I stopped and closed my eyes. Bloody hell.
You heard that, didn't you?
He asked quietly. I had to get this over with now. If I let the situation simmer below the surface, it could get much worse when it finally, inevitably boiled over. I turned to face him. I did.
I'm sorry about Willie.
Don't blame her. She's right. I'll pack my things and stay in a hotel tonight. Tomorrow, I'll look for another lodging house.
You won't go back to the same one? Mrs. Whitten won't let you back, will she?
He took the remaining steps two at a time until he was just one step below me. He still towered over me.
Ignore Willie. She's overreacting.
You don't owe me anything, Gabe.
We're friends, and friends help each other.
We're not friends. You made it clear that you're doing this because you feel guilt, not out of friendship. He caught my hand, only to immediately let it go again. He cleared his throat.
Stay for dinner, then see how you feel after that. I've invited Alex's entire family. If you're not convinced to stay after speaking to Cyclops and his wife, Catherine, then I'll drive you to a hotel myself.
Won't they think as Willie does?
We'll soon find out.
But I've got nothing suitable to wear for dinner.
You're dressed perfectly for a casual affair with just a few close friends. Now, I have to make a telephone call. Alex will make you a cocktail in the drawing room, and I'll return shortly.
Alex led the way down the stairs to the drawing room, a room I'd already been in during my previous visit. While it wasn't as cozy as the sitting room upstairs, it was still inviting. Alex made cocktails at a drinks trolley, then handed one to me.
It's a martini.
Daisy's new favorite drink. They were popular in America before Prohibition, so she told me.
She has friends there? Family?
I don't know. I think she has magazines sent over. She likes to keep up with the latest in everything.
She does strike me as someone who'll change her hairstyle as often as the wind changes direction.
You say it with disapproval, but I think she'd be rather pleased that you noticed. He was about to take a sip of his cocktail, but suddenly looked up.
Why?
Daisy would hate me hinting that she might be interested in him, considering she didn't yet realize she was interested. Isn't any woman pleased when a man takes notice of her?
I didn't. Well, I did, but that's only because she's very obvious.
He sipped his cocktail, a thoughtful frown on his face.
I'm surprised you two are friends. You're very different.
She's outgoing and I'm quiet.
You're stable and she's impulsive.
It wasn't the worst thing he could have called her. I think Daisy and I complement each other. Speaking of obvious people, I overheard the conversation Gabe had with Willie earlier. She's very much against me staying here, as are you. I want to assure you I'm leaving after dinner. I don't want to compromise Gabe's reputation in any way. He lowered the glass.
You think we're worried about his reputation?
Well, yes. You both mentioned how it will look to other people, and I agree. It will look inappropriate. He scooted forward on the chair, cradling the glass in both hands. He fixed me with an earnest stare.
You're right. It will look that way. But we're not worried about what strangers think, and nor is he. We're worried.
He closed his mouth and sat back in the chair when Gabe entered. His gaze tracked his friend as he made himself a martini at the drinks trolley, then joined me on the sofa. Gabe lifted his glass in salute to each of us in turn.
Cheers.
It wasn't until he sipped that he noticed Alex watching him.
Everything's fine, just as I told you it would be. She's coming to dinner too.
Alex glanced at the clock on the mantel.
She must be keen to get here by 8.
She'll be late.
Naturally,
Alex muttered. Gabe smiled, but it was hesitant, perhaps even a little concerned.
There'll be another dining with us,
he said to me.
Her name's Ivy. She's my fiancée.
Chapter 12. Thank goodness I hadn't just taken a sip of my martini, or I might have spat it out all over the lovely rug in surprise. Gabe had never mentioned Ivy. He'd never even given me an inkling that he was engaged. I supposed it was an odd thing to insert into a conversation simply for the sake of mentioning it. The topic of women had never come up between us. The only time anyone had alluded to Gabe's popularity with the opposite sex was when Cyclops implied he'd been rather wild before the war. I wondered if Ivy was someone he knew then, or a more recent addition to his life. I look forward to meeting her. It was true. I did look forward to seeing the woman who could attract such a paragon as Gabe. I couldn't decide whether she would be beautiful and elegant or down-to-earth and athletic. When I'd first met him, I would have guessed the former, but now that I knew him a little better and saw the type of friends he kept, I was leaning toward the latter.
She says she looks forward to meeting you too, he said.
Now I know why Willie and Alex were worried about me staying. They're right, by the way, I can't stay. It's not fair to Ivy.
She's a good sport.
No woman is that good a sport. If you don't know that, you clearly don't know women very well. Alex chuckled into his cocktail glass. Gabe grinned too. I had the feeling I was on the outside of an inside joke.
Just wait until you meet before you make a hasty decision about staying or leaving, Gabe said.
Bristow entered and announced the arrival of Mr. and Mrs. Bailey and their daughters Ella, May, and Lulu. Alex kissed the cheeks of his mother and sisters and accepted a hearty clap on the shoulder from his father. Gabe followed in his footsteps, and the Baileys greeted him warmly, as if he were another son who'd recently moved out of the family home. The two families must be close. The three sisters tried and failed to hide their scrutiny of me before introductions were made. Their mother was more polite, warmly shaking my hand and not giving me the obvious once over. She was a willowy woman, with blonde hair shot through with silver, and fine lines fanning from the corners of her eyes that deepened upon her smile. I suspected she smiled a lot. There was just something sweet about her, yet a little bit cheeky too. I'd wager she appreciated a good joke. Her eldest daughter, Ella, couldn't have been much younger than me. She seemed a little more reserved than her two sisters, who lost interest in me the moment the cocktail glasses were handed around. Not that their father let the youngest Lulu have one, which caused her to flounce off in a huff and throw herself into one of the armchairs. May accepted a glass with a triumphant smile directed at her little sister that only made Lulu's pout deepen. May sipped, gave Lulu another smug smile, then turned away and pulled a face at the taste. Catherine joined me on the sofa and nodded at the three men talking quietly near the door. We've only been here 2 minutes and already they're discussing a case. There were some developments today, I said. So Gabe told me when he called and invited us to dinner. He said you were attacked. Are you all right, Miss Ash? Please call me Sylvia, and yes, thank you, I am. The attacker ran off when I hit him in the... I cleared my throat. When I fought back. She smiled. I'm glad to see you're not helpless. Nate wants to teach the girls some moves to defend themselves. May has no interest whatsoever. She thinks it'll make her too masculine, and Lulu does whatever May does. Ella has taken to his lessons with enthusiasm, though. She looked at her eldest, who was hovering near the men. I thought she was there because she was infatuated with Gabe, but now I realized she was merely absorbing everything they said. Like her sisters, she was very pretty, but they were tall and slim like their mother, where she was tall and more powerfully built like Cyclops.
Are you staying here until this blows over?
Catherine made it sound like an innocent question, but I suspected she was very interested in the answer. As someone who probably saw herself as a mother figure to Gabe now that his parents were out of the country, it made sense that she wanted to make sure I didn't intrude on his relationship with Ivy.
There's been a misunderstanding. I'm leaving after dinner and will stay at a hotel.
She nodded sagely.
That's for the best.
I'll explain as much to Ivy when she arrives.
So she is coming.
Catherine didn't pose it as a question or sound surprised. Indeed, she made it sound like it was a given.
Don't worry, I'm sure she'll say all the right things.
She watched Gabe and leaned closer to me.
Did he tell you anything about her?
No.
I see. Gabe and I hardly know one another, I clarified.
She took a sip of her cocktail, her gaze still on Gabe. Then she suddenly turned to me.
They hardly knew one another when they got engaged. It was very sudden. None of us had met her beforehand. It was 1917 and Gabe was on leave for 2 weeks. They met at the beginning of those 2 weeks, then by the end, they announced they were getting married.
Is he always so impulsive? She smiled sadly.
He used to be. By the time the war ended, that zest for living, that urgency to experience all life has to offer, vanished. It was as if the hardships of the past 4 years filed off the wilder parts of him. Willie says the war took away the best of him and left behind a shell. But I disagree. I think it took away the unnecessary parts and exposed the better man underneath. While everything about the war was dreadful, it did teach Gabe to slow down and savor his good fortune instead of take it for granted. Life probably would have done that eventually, but war sped up the process.
Is that why they haven't married yet? They're savoring their engagement? I'm sure it's a very special time for them both.
I think they just want to get to know one another better. There was very little chance for them to be together immediately after the announcement, of course, and Gabe didn't return home again until 2 months after Armistice. When he returned, he threw himself into his work with Scotland Yard. He needed something to do. He has been kept busy this last year.
She glanced at the photograph I'd noticed on my last visit of a young Gabe standing alongside his parents.
With India and Mataway, the wedding will be pushed back further. Gabe would never marry without them present.
When will they return?
They didn't say.
It seemed a little unfair not to give a firm date when their son's happiness hinged on them being home. Gabe broke away from Cyclops and Alex and joined us.
Another martini?
I declined, and Catherine had barely touched her first one. He sat down next to her and opened his mouth to say something when a woman walked in. He rose again and smiled at her.
Ivy, come in.
He kissed her cheek. She linked her arm with his and smiled up at him.
I made it, and it's only a little after 8. Aren't you impressed?
She took his hand and stepped back so he could admire her before closing the gap again and placing his hand on her waist.
I am. You look as beautiful as always, but I did say not to dress formally.
She laughed.
Darling, you know nothing about fashion.
As she talked, her gaze scanned the room until it landed on me. One of my guesses about her was right. She was a sleek beauty. Her statuesque figure suited the slim-fitting, copper-colored, sleeveless silk dress with the cluster of crystals at the cinched waist. Her dark hair was cut short like Daisy's, but fell perfectly straight without a strand out of place. Daisy looked like she'd just got out of bed, whereas Ivy looked as though she'd stepped out of a fashion magazine. The diamonds at her throat, ears, and wrist left me in no doubt that she matched Gabe in wealth as well as height and good looks. They were a beautiful couple. Heads must turn when they walked into a party together, just as we all watched them now. Gabe introduced me to Ivy as his friend from the glass library. She gave me a warm smile.
Gabe told me what a traumatic day you've had. You poor thing. It must have been awful being attacked like that.
I was a little shaken afterward, but I'm all right now.
I'm sure my Gabe took good care of you. Protecting those in need is something he does so well and so willingly.
She fought the attacker off by herself, Gabe said. She didn't need me.
Ivy's eyes widened. They were as lovely as the rest of her, all golden brown, framed by long lashes darkened by soot mixed with petroleum jelly.
How extraordinary! But she does need you now, doesn't she?
I'm only staying for dinner, I assured her. She blinked those big eyes at Gabe. I wonder if she knew how innocent it made her look. How beautiful, too.
You told me she was staying here until the attacker was caught and the investigation concluded.
There was a misunderstanding, I said before Gabe could say otherwise. I'm definitely leaving after dinner. Ivy took my hand in both of hers.
Nonsense, Sylvia. It's much too dangerous for you to stay anywhere else. This is the safest place you can be with Gabe here to protect you.
And Alex,
Gabe added. Ivy squeezed my hand and gave me a tentative smile.
Promise you'll stay?
I glanced at Gabe. He merely lifted a shoulder in a shrug.
Perhaps just for tonight, but only if it's all right with you,
I said to Ivy.
It is. Now, you must tell me what it's like working in the library. It sounds fascinating.